I rode with old Jeb Stuart and his band of Southern horse. There never were no Yankees who could beat us force to force. No, they never did defeat us, but we never could evade their dirty foreign politics and cowardly blockade. Well, we hadn't any powder and we hadn't any shot. We hadn't any money to buy what we ain't got. So we rode our worn out horses and we ate home plain cornmeal. And we licked them where we caught them with Southern guts and steel. Well, we sunk the ship at Sumter and we broke her plumb in two. And we showed them bully Yankees just what we aim to do. At a little creek called Bull Run, we took their starry rag to wipe our horses down with, and I ain't here to brag. Well, there aren't as many left of us as rode out at the start. And then there are the weary, weak, and body sad of heart. We fought a fight to tell about, and I am here to say, I'd climb my horse and follow Marsh to hell come any day.
Yeah. Welcome, everyone, to the Rebel Madman here at Republic Broadcasting Network on the 28th day of October in the year of 2023. And before we jump into today's program, I would like to, may I use the word beseech? May I beseech you to do whatever you possibly can to go to republicbroadcasting.org, hit that donate button, send them a check, call them up, give them a credit card or a debit card, or, you know, whatever you can do to keep this platform vibrant, to keep it out there, because they're carrying the message of freedom and the truths of history. Now, folks, you're not going to go to too many venues that's going to provide you with the truths of history. RBN does that. So find a way to support them on this platform as much as possible. And that being said, let me welcome my guest host for today. And that darn rascal is up there eating goobers in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. And he's having a good time with all of those folks at the Dixie Republic, who is a sponsor of RBN, folks. Get in touch with Dixie Republic and look at what they have to offer. But my buddy's up there, probably sitting in Confederate Corner. Is that?
That's where I'm at. Yes, sir. I'm sitting right here at Confederate Corner Coffee Shop. And, man, I'm surrounded by battle flags and the truth and good friends. You can't beat that, man. I got more than that Larry Fink guy and Bill Gates put together today, Mike Getty. You know, today I have enough. In fact, I have so much I can share. They'll never have enough.
I'm terribly jealous of you, not only because you're at Dixie Republic, but because you've got goobers.
Oh, and they were good too. Them Cajun ones, they are a creeper. They will hit you after you swallow it. Like, ooh, that was spicy. I've been enjoying them all day.
Oh my goodness, those are the kinds I love. Those are the kinds I love. Well, Stephen, do you mind if I use you for kind of a board here to answer some questions?
I'll do my best, sir.
Okay, my subject for today, folks, is how many atrocities, how many war atrocities, how many deaths of innocent people will you accept before you say no more? Now, folks, this goes back a while. Go ahead, Steve.
I'm going to say I'm not going to accept any myself personally, but it looks like this nation has different ideas.
Well, let me ask you this. How many people does an entity have to kill before it becomes a murderer?
One.
Okay, so one. So if you kill one, you are a murderer. What if you provide assistance to that murderer? What does that make you, Stephen?
An accomplice.
An accomplice. Ooh. Wow. Well, let's look at a little bit of, you know, try to help us out here and look at a little bit of a definition maybe of what is an accomplice. You know, and that is someone who gives aid and comfort. Okay, that's an accomplice. Do the people of the United States give aid and comfort to the United States government, Stephen?
Well, we support it with our taxes and with our compliance, definitely.
And our vote.
Yes, sir.
Well, I shouldn't say our vote because I don't.
Same here.
I should say the vote. So here is my question again. No one is more the master of total war than is the United States. And it started 160 years ago with Abraham Lincoln. Total war, not only on the enemy combatants, but on the civilian population as well. And that includes men, women, and children. And let's not forget that William Tecumseh Sherman, in a letter to his wife, said that he wanted to eliminate all of the Southern people, children, women, and men. He wanted to kill them all. So, and did are we supporting the government of William Tecumseh Sherman, Stephen?
We are.
Oh. Yeah.
We definitely okay. are.
Well, you know, I wrote an article. And I know that's going to strike some people as funny, but I wrote an article back in some time back about, believe it or not, Republican presidents and war crimes. Republican okay. presidents, people. Now, those are the ones that conservatives say they believe in. Those are the ones that conservatives say, that's my man. That's the one that the conservatives think is going to rise over the hill and save them from all those evil Democrats. But have Republican presidents been more responsible for war crimes in history than Democrat presidents?
You know, thinking back, it just seems like they have all committed so many. Looking at what was done during World War II under Roosevelt, for one, and then Truman, too. But
right.
yeah, that it all. But then there was Nixon, and but then was Johnson before Nixon with Vietnam. So I don't know. It just seems like they're all murderous scum to me. Anyone associated with the government. But go ahead, sir.
What do they have in common, Stephen?
They're all war criminals, perhaps.
They're all representatives of the American government.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
And no matter how many war crimes this government commits, the people go rushing out to support it. And I actually had someone tell me that he didn't support the government just because he voted in an election.
Mm.
Can you speak to that level of insanity?
Yeah, I mean, I'm participating and offering up their legitimacy, and it's I quit doing that a long time ago, honestly. But yeah, there's people should just turn away from this thing. It is, like you said, a murderous beast. There's a song by Steppenwolf that they call Monster that came out back, and that describes the U.S. today to a T.
Well, guys, on April the 28th in 2004. Decent Americans in this country, at least I hope there are some left, were shocked to see pictures of American soldiers torturing prisoners in a military prison in Iraq that was known as Abu Ghraib. While there were many who saw nothing wrong with such atrocities, many more were totally repulsed. As a matter of fact, there was a senator from Colorado, an American Indian by the name of Ben Nighthorse Campbell, who asked one simple question, and he said, and I quote, "How the hell did these people get in our army?" Well, Senator, you might want to look back to the founding of the Republican Party if you want to answer that question. And so those were strange comments indeed, coming from an American Indian whose ancestors were tortured, raped, killed at the hands of the same army, under the same flag, and buried in the abyss that has become the study of American history are the true stories of Republican President Abraham Lincoln's army and its war crimes extraordinaire, perpetrated on both blacks and whites in the South during our second war for independence that Yankees call the Civil War. Now, I wrote an article back then in 2004, and I put in a lot of statistics and a lot of, and they're all available in the National Archives, Stephen. And they're available in the 126 volumes of the series in the National Archives, which is known as, and I quote, "The War of the Rebellion, Official Records of the Union and Confederate Armies." Well, after the conclusion of the war in 1865, and I have documented the atrocities, especially in Kentucky, Missouri, Maryland, and other places. But after the conclusion of the war in 1865, this Union army that had killed, murdered, and raped its way across the South and burned, I should put that in there, the Union army and its war crime infested leadership turned their attention on the American Indians, especially those in the West, which included the former Senator Nighthorse Campbell's ancestors of the Northern Cheyenne. The facts of the atrocities mentioned in my previous article inflicted on the American Indians can be found, as I stated before, in the National Archives. A thorough study of both resources listed should prove to even the most dubious that torture and gross mistreatment of others are in fact in the DNA of the American military. That's why they use stupid phrases like, instead of innocent civilians, they call them collateral damage. Does that make them any less dead? Does that make the crime any less criminal? But anyway, let's take a look at that. It appears today there is a distinct division on how Americans are viewing the news of war crimes perpetrated on Iraqi detainees by American troops back in 2004. Although the president and the secretary of defense back then both apologized for those actions, their minions in the press and their shields on the radio are still trying mightily to rationalize any of those acts away if they're ever brought up. Oh, just the horrors of war, some say. You know, kind of like collateral damage that I mentioned before. While there are others claiming the stories are much worse than what we were told, while even the Democrats on the Senate Armed Services Committee were working hand in hand with their fellow Republicans to suppress the news of sex crimes and murder perpetrated against these Iraqis who had been convicted of no crime, out of the hands of the American people. And I stop and think about this, folks. These people were mistreated, criminally tortured, sexually tortured, and other things without any trial, without any conviction whatsoever. Now, if you want to say they were involved in war crimes or whatever, then try them and prove it. That is what we allegedly stand for. Well, perhaps some of the photos and videotapes that the United States Congress hid on Abu Ghraib. What if they were to find their way into the hands of the foreign press? Then they would be available for the whole world to see. Even while our politicians on both sides work like cats in a sandbox to cover up the truth from the citizens of this country and the world. Now, folks, all of that is not new. The much-worshipped first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, conducted just such a war against the citizens of the South. Murder, rape, pillaging, and theft were rampant, perpetrated by the Union Army. Charles Adams documents in his fine work, a great book I would suggest for all, and it's called When in the Course of Human Events, that some northern newspapers call for the total annihilation of the people of the South. Imagine that. Are we doing any different today, Stephen, with the people of Palestine?
No, it's more ethnic cleansing, and it goes all the way back to that. It's just same old story. We talked about this earlier, how we are watching the same movie over and over again, it seems, with these people. And now they want the whole world.
Oh, without a doubt. Well, the wonderful King Abe the First, who was a master of duplicity, well, after all, he was a lawyer, had issued a code of conduct, if you will, for the Northern Army. It was known as General Order Number 100, also known as the Lieber Code. Well, the code's author was the German legal scholar Francis Lieber, an advisor to Otto von Bismarck, and a staunch advocate of centralized government power, just like Lincoln. In his writings, Lieber denounced the federal system of government created by the American Constitution, as having created confederacies of petty sovereigns. And of course, he dismissed the Jeffersonian philosophy of government as a collection of obsolete ideas. People, the Republican Party, felt like freedom and rightful liberty were obsolete ideas. They said so. In Germany, Lieber had been arrested several times for his subversive activities. Now, the Lieber Code, while mentioning the illegality of waging war against the civilian population, gave total discretion to the commanders in the field to dismiss the code if they felt like the situation warranted that dismissal. Like the war against Iraq, the war Lincoln brought to the South targeted civilians from the very beginning. Did not the sanctions of the past 13 years weigh much more heavily on the civilians than it did the military in Iraq? Wouldn't it, what's her face? Madeline
Not So Bright, yes, sir.
Yeah, who said that it was perfectly acceptable for a 500,000 people in Iraq to die because of a blockade on medicine and food, especially elderly and young people? It's acceptable. Now, compare, if you will, those sanctions against Iraq and Lincoln's Anaconda Plan against the South. Oh, you're going to find, and people will ask us, Stephen, why do you study history, man? It's just old stuff. It doesn't make any difference. How would you respond to that, Stephen?
Well, first of all, it does make a difference. And second, I study it because I've been lied to about it all my life by the media and my educators repeatedly. I've had to dig and learn and uncover the truth for myself.
And you've done it very well, and I commend you for that. But Lincoln's idea was to blockade all of the southern ports. Now, folks, in case you aren't aware, blockading anyone's ports is an act of war. And he did that long before Fort Sumter. And he did that in an effort to starve the southern population into submission and to stop their ability to trade their product, cotton, on the open market. Drugs and medicines were on the list of banned items by Lincoln. Ironic, is it not, that George W. Bush included vaccines for infants in the things to be denied Iraq by the embargo? Well, any kind of medication for infants. Now, if old Madeline Not So Bright found the deaths of 500,000 civilians, many of them children and elderly, as acceptable, do you really think that this government, Stephen, gives a damn about a few thousand tortured detainees at Guantanamo?
No, sir, there's no way. They don't care about us at all. We're just resources to be harvested by these people. And exactly. They may have inadvertently done the Iraqi children a favor by keeping those big harm of vaccines away from them, but that's a different matter.
Well, you know, Stephen, they've also kept something from us pretty well. Do you know one of the members of the United States Navy who was heavily involved in the torturing of these detainees at Guantanamo?
Who would that be?
Ron DeSantis.
Oh, well, no, don't say it ain't so.
Oh, I can't.
Ron DeSanctimonious. Well, there we go.
Yeah, Mr. Sanctimonious was in charge in many ways of the torture of people who had never been tried, who had never been convicted of anything, and yet they were going to be published.
That explains why he signed that bill in Israel, I guess.
Ah! Yeah. Well, the pieces kind of fit together, huh?
Yes, sir, they do.
Well, good old Abe had nothing but praise for his commanders who perpetrated these acts of violence on civilians in the South. In the early stages of the war, Commanding General George McClellan, reacting to acts of terrorism against the citizens in the South, sent Lincoln a personal letter requesting that the war be conducted in accordance with the highest principles known to a Christian civilization, unquote, and to avoid targeting anyone in the civilian population. Shortly after receiving that letter, Lincoln relieved McClellan of his command, and obviously he ignored his letter. But in Iraq, as we did in Vietnam, the citizens were seen in the light of collective responsibility for acts perpetrated on soldiers. I'm sure the phrase that I heard often in Vietnam in 65 and 67 was, kill them all, let God sort them out. And I'm sure that is just as popular with our troops today as they head for the Middle East as it was with soldiers all those years ago. Try to explain to a foot soldier who lives with fear every moment of their life and sees those who are obviously civilians blown to bits by U.S. rockets and bombs that for them to shoot a civilian was a crime. That does not compute to the rational mind. And of course, it creates a lose-lose situation. The more of the people that we kill, the more enemies we create. Just look at Vietnam. Many estimate the casualties exceeded 1 million or more in Vietnam, and our troops never lost a major battle. Yet we left Southeast Asia with our tails between our legs. If our soldiers were used as they were designed to be, for defense of our country and for defense of our rights only, they would not be faced with this mind-destroying dilemma of killing innocents, civilians. But as we read about the battle for the city of Fallujah, think back to General Sherman's acts against the city of Randolph, Tennessee in 1862. Now, folks, this is long before his march to the sea. So when Confederate sharpshooters from the town fired upon federal gunboats, Sherman had the entire town burned to the ground. He took civilian hostages from the town and in some instances traded them for federal soldiers or just plain and simply executed them. Now, how does that relate to Vietnam and My Lai, Stephen?
You know, that's something I was reading this book about lies my teacher told me. That's what it was called. Students in high school these days, and this was written back in the late 90s, I think, and then the 10th edition is the one I was reading about. They don't even hear about My Lai when they talk about the history of Vietnam now. It's no wonder that people are growing up so ignorant. They and believe that we're the good guys over there to preserve democracy and, you know, fight for freedom.
Well, Stephen, were there any difference in the people at My Lai and the people in Jackson and Meridian, Mississippi?
They're just different colors, spoke a different language. They were just civilians, just regular people.
Well, here's the thing that most people are unaware of. Jackson and Meridian, Mississippi, both of the towns were burned to the ground, even though there were no Confederate armies in their area. Now that's, you know, stop and think about that. Sherman soldiers then sacked the town, and as Sherman biographer John Marsalek wrote, soldiers, and I quote people from the official records, entered residences, appropriating whatever appeared to be of value. Those articles which they could not carry, they just simply broke. And Sherman would write of that campaign, and it's in the National Archives again, folks, and I quote, for 5 days, 10,000 of our men worked hard and with a will. In that work of destruction, with axes, sledges, crowbars, clawbars, and with fire, Meridian, Mississippi no longer exists, unquote. Well, there is
that sounds a lot like they're doing to Gaza right now, sir. I just
exactly.
Sorry,
yeah. No, you're great. That is exactly, that's a poignant observation, Stephen, and that is exactly right. And in 1862, now, folks, this is before 1864 and the March to the Sea. In 1862, Sherman wrote his wife, this is also documented, that his purpose in the war would be, and I quote, extermination, not of soldiers alone, that is the least of the trouble, but all of the people of the South, unquote.
That's just, I mean, and why? How did they work these people up into a frenzy like that? Were we not, I don't know, it was a different time and all, but you could see how they do it over and over again, demonize it. You read some of this earlier on my show about how one government sets another war up and the people just are forced to go along. You know, it just, people are not going to go to war against each other willingly. It makes no sense. It's destructive. It's stupid. And winning, quote unquote, winning a war, it destroys you as well as the one that you beat.
Well, absolutely, Stephen. And I think even more relevant was Sherman's wonderful wife who wrote back to him from that letter and said, again, it's documented, folks, and I quote, a war of extermination and that all Southerners would be driven into like swine into the sea. May we carry fire and sword into their states till not one habitation is left standing, unquote.
Oh, man, that's exactly what they threatened to do to Gaza. You know, the first Nakba was in the Confederacy.
Yes, that's the point I'm working really hard to make here, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm sure those wonderful neocons and the wonderful Democrats like John Kerry was would have loved to have had generals such as Sherman in Vietnam, in Iraq, and now in Gaza. In October of 1864, Sherman ordered a subordinate, Lewis Watkins, to go to Fairmont, Georgia, and listen to what he ordered him to do. Quote, burn 10 or 12 homes, kill a few at random, and let them know that it will be repeated every time any one of our trains is fired upon. So here's the other thing that I did in my research. I found out that after, you know, Confederates on their own, maybe not the military, were actually firing on these Yankee trains that were going through their country, that, you know, they were many times when that would happen, Sherman and others would go into the local towns and get people and put them on the trains as shields so that if they received any gunfire, the innocent civilians would be killed by their own people.
That's just, and it makes sense that they would want to do that. But, you know, one of the things that makes me think, oh, hey, we got the first break, sir.
Yep, there it is, the first break. We'll be back with you, folks.
Tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Do you begin to smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. Will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now, or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge, and I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balance protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for a private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday.
Yankee letter said that they'd be coming any day. And if you planned on getting out of line, best be on our way. Our tattered gray was torn between if we should run or fight. But our southern pride swelled up inside as we dug in for the night. Then I heard a rider calling, they're coming down the road. And the fiery flash of 20-pounders started to explode. Tried our best to stop them, our efforts were in vain. In the distance you could hear the sound of Dixie's last refrain.
They're burning Georgia down, folks. They're burning Georgia down. Thank you, Balsam Range. I love them and their music about the South. I just absolutely do in so many ways. And, folks, I'm going to throw a posit out there, Stephen, and I want you to respond to it, if you would, please, sir. The only people in America today who are holding fast to the tradition of what America was are the people of the South.
I have to agree with you. I mean, I have definitely come to embrace it more and more over the past few years. I think it's the way forward if there's going to be any future for this country, because whatever, we have been under an occupational government ever since 65, and what's wrong with another tried independence and freedom? How many times did it take Ireland?
Yeah. And here's the thing, is the common denominator, the exact opposite of freedom, the exact opposite of liberty is government. And people just can't seem to get that in their minds. Governments cannot support freedom and rightful liberty for individuals because it would destroy what their purpose is. And that is to use the people as their milk cows
and the people to send out there and to die so that they can make more money. That's exactly what it is. But, you know, here's the other thing that really bothers me, Stephen, about this. And although it is rarely mentioned in any by any mainstream historian, there were multiple acts of rape committed by federal soldiers in the South on blacks and whites. The University of South Carolina's library, which I would recommend for you folks to go look at before it disappears, contains a collection of thousands of diaries and letters of Southern women that mention these unspeakable atrocities against them. Now, is anyone beginning to pick up a pattern here? Sherman's band of criminal looters that were called bummers sacked the slave cabins as well as the plantation houses. With the utter disregard for blacks that was the normal among Union soldiers, the soldiers ransacked the slave cabins just like they did the whites, taking whatever they wanted for themselves. A routine procedure would be to hang a slave by his neck until he told federal soldiers where the plantation owner's valuables were hidden. And then, of course, Stephen, there was the much-heralded March to the Sea, where Sherman claimed in his memoirs that his army destroyed more than $100 million in private property and stole more than $20 million in the South. Your thoughts, sir?
No way that we have even recovered from that assault to this day. You know, before this happened, Mississippi was the wealthiest state in the Union. The South was the epitome of culture and civilization in this country at the time, and it was just wiped out. The same thing has happened over and over again. They've done it again and again. Look what they've done to Syria, okay? And the way that they just wipe these countries out. I've been saying that their plan is to turn from the Nile to the Euphrates just into smithereens. That's the Greater Israel Project. So they'll be greater when everything else is just blown to smithereens and they're living in their bunker or something. These people, you know, it's come to the point where something's got to give.
Oh, I could not agree more. There is no way that I could agree with you more, Stephen. And he said, you know, we have to understand that at the same time that Sherman was making that march to the sea, folks, which the, you know, I'm trying to think of the foundation in D.C., who says that the march to the sea was the fourth largest ecological disaster in the history of this planet. But now we can't mention that, but here's the thing that most people forget. While this was occurring, Union General Philip Sheridan was perpetrating a similar terror on the citizens of the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia. In the autumn of 1864, Sheridan and his 35,000 infantry troops burned the Shenandoah Valley to the ground. As Sheridan described it in a letter to General Grant, in the first few days, he, and I quote, destroyed over 2,200 barns, over 700 mills, and he has driven in front of the army over 4,000 head of stock, and they have killed not less than 3,000 sheep. And then he finished his missive with, "Tomorrow I will continue the destruction." Now, one soldier wrote home that he had personally set 60 private homes on fire. And he opined it, and I quote, "It was a hard-looking sight to see the women and children turned out of doors at this season of the year." Now, also from the official records, a Sergeant William T. Patterson wrote, and I quote, "The whole country around is wrapped in flames. The heavens are aglow with the light thereof. Such mourning, such lamentation, such crying and pleading for mercy by defenseless women, I never saw or want ever to see again in my lifetime." It was no accident that these fine specimens of terrorism, Sherman and Sheridan, were the leaders of the government turned loose on the American Indian as they brought terror to their villages and homes in search of complete and total empire for this government. No one refutes today the terror that was brought to the American Indian by the federal armies. Even blacks played their part in the subjugation of the red man. Have we forgotten the much heralded Buffalo Soldiers? Just exactly who were they fighting? How can we today place such honor on a group of soldiers who were fighting and killing to take by force the land and property that didn't belong to them, Stephen? Your thoughts, sir?
I'm reminded how this king was able to give away these land grants of land he didn't own. You know, other people lived on it and owned it, but he was giving all these grants to these soldiers that go in and take it, and it's yours, I guess, was kind of the caveat at that point. But that's been done over and over again. Land that wasn't theirs, they gave away, and then they did the same thing when it came to Palestine. Someone else lived there, and they weren't going to just buy it, so they came in and took it again. And if you don't think they will do the same to you people, they will. They want your land, their real estate acquisition operations. That's what Catherine Austin Fitz called those George Floyd riots. Well, that's what the war is, too, basically. It's real estate acquisition operations for your betters.
Ah, well stated, brother. But let's look at, as I have just mentioned, the pattern of terror that was brought to the South by this wonderful Union Army. You know, that Union Army that you vote for, that wonderful president that you think is the greatest thing since sliced bread. But here, what I want to do is to read to you from the official records at the Library of Congress about what was done by the Union Army to the American Indian. And first of all, the first thing I'm going to touch on is Washita Creek. And here is the official records, folks. This is still in Washington, D.C., or it was back when I got it. But here is what they said. Before dawn, the troopers attacked the 51 lodges, killing a number of men, women, and children. Custer reported about 100 killed, though Indian accounts claimed 11 warriors plus 19 women and children lost their lives. More than 50 Cheyenne were captured, mainly women and children. Custer's losses were light, 2 officers and 19 enlisted men killed. Following Sheridan's plan to cripple resistance, Custer ordered the slaughter of the Indian pony and mule herd, which amounted to over 800 animals slaughtered and killed by federal troops. The lodges of Black Kettle's people, with all of their winter supplies of food and clothing, were torched and burned. Then let's look at Sand Creek. There's another one I promise you weren't taught about by Coach down at high school. Sand Creek. Let's look at the congressional testimony of one John Smith. Wow, what a name. An eyewitness to the attack by Colonel Chivington, who, by the way, at the same time that he committed these atrocities against the American Indian, he was running for Congress in Colorado. And here was the question that was put by this investigating committee in the Congress to these witnesses. And here's the first question. Were the women and children slaughtered indiscriminately or only so far as they were with the warriors? Answer, indiscriminately. Question, were there any acts of barbarity perpetrated there that came under your own observation? Yes, sir. I saw the bodies of those lying there cut all to pieces, worse mutilated than any I ever saw before, with the women cut all to pieces. Now, Mr. Buckaloo from the U.S. Congress asked the question, how cut? The answer was, with knives, scalped, their brains knocked out, children 2 or 3 months old, all ages lying there, from sucking infants all the way to their warriors. Then Mr. Gooch from Congress asked a question. Did you personally see it done? Answer, yes, sir. I saw them fall. Question, fall when they were killed? Answer, yes, sir. Question, did you see them when they were mutilated? Answer, yes, sir. Question, by whom were they mutilated? Answer, by the United States troops. Now, let's look at Wounded Knee, and we've all heard of Wounded Knee. And let's look at what American Horse, a Lakota warrior, had to say about what happened at Wounded Knee. And I quote, there was a woman with an infant in her arms who was killed as she almost touched the flag of truce. A mother was shot down with her infant. The child, not knowing that its mother was dead, was still nursing. The women, as they were fleeing with their babies, were killed together, shot right through. And after most all of them had been killed, a cry was made that all of those who were not killed or wounded should come forth and they would be safe. Little boys came out of their places of refuge, and as soon as they came in sight of a number of soldiers who surrounded them and butchered them, unquote. Your thoughts, Stephen?
No, well, and a direct line from there to Abu Ghraib, it's the same military, it's the same government, people. They did that to them. They'll do that to us.
And we keep supporting them. We keep supporting them with taxes. We keep supporting them with votes. We keep, you know, oh, well, you know, it doesn't make any difference if it's an R or a D who's in charge of murder. It's still murder, people.
I agree, sir. I like the analogy you made that people support them. That they'll support this government as long as they get to choose their own firing squad.
Oh, yes, very much so. Well, let me jump now to the testimony of one Dewey Beard, who was a Lakota. And his testimony before this Congressional Investigation Committee. And here was his testimony. I was badly wounded, and I was pretty weak, too. While I was lying on my back, I looked down the ravine and saw a lot of women coming up and crying. When I saw these women, girls and little girls and boys coming up, I saw soldiers on both sides of the ravine shoot at them until they had killed every one of them. Going a little further, I came upon my mother, who was moving slowly, being very badly wounded. When I caught up to her, she said, my son, pass me by. I am going to fall down now. As she went up, soldiers on both sides of the ravine shot into her and killed her. I heard the Hotchkiss or the Gatling gun shooting at them along the bank. Now there went up from these dying people a medley of death songs that would make the hardest heart weep. Each one sings a different death song if he chooses. The death song is expressive of their wish to die. It is also a requiem for the dead. It expresses that the singer is anxious to die too. Any comments there, Stephen?
It's just horrifying to think what's happened to, in this country. You know, it's just, and we think it can't happen again. I do believe that it'll happen here again, that they want to bring that level of violence and destruction back to this country, that they want to do to this country what they've done to Libya, Syria, and now Gaza. That unless we turn away from these people and deal with them, these people need to be dealt with, okay? If that's Fed posting, I'm sorry, but they should be dealt with. Unless we do that, then they're going to deal with us in the same way as they did these people.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, my friend. And here is, you know, one of the things that I wanted to kind of bring into play here was also, I think it we should get a comment. I've listened to the witnesses who were American Indian. Now let's look at a comment from the commanding general, Nelson A. Miles. Now, if you folks think these Indians were all lying for effect – let's look at what the commanding general said. And I quote, a detachment of soldiers was sent into the camp to search for any arms remaining there, and it was reported that their rudeness frightened the women and children. It was also reported that a remark was made by one of the soldiers that when we get the arms away from them, we can do as we please with them, indicating that they were to be destroyed. Some of the Indians could understand English. This and other things alarmed the Indians, and a scuffle occurred between one warrior who had a rifle in his hand and two soldiers. The rifle was discharged, and the massacre occurred. Not only the warriors, but the sick Chief Bigfoot and a large number of women and children who tried to escape by running and scattering over the prairie were hunted down by my troops and killed, unquote. How is that different from Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong and their utter desecration and their murder of millions of people, Stephen?
Not just in scale, I would say. Maybe the ideological justification may have been somewhat different, but it's the same. Murder is murder.
Absolutely. Well, let's continue with this official congressional records here. And let's now go to a man by the name of Black Elk, who was also Lakota Sioux. And his direct testimony was, my people look pitiful. There was a big drought, and the rivers and the creeks seemed to be dying. Nothing would grow that the people had planted, and the Wasichus, which means the white people, had been sending less cattle and other foods than ever before. The Wasichus had slaughtered all of the bison and shut us up in pens. It looked as if we might all starve to death. We could not eat lies, and there was nothing else that we could do, unquote. And then let's jump to one L. Frank Baum, B-A-U-M, who was editor and publisher of the Aberdeen Saturday Pioneer in December of 1890. And here is what he said. Quote, Sitting Bull, most renowned Sioux of modern history, is dead. He was an Indian with a white man's spirit of hatred and revenge for those who had wronged him and his. With his fall, the nobility of the redskin is extinguished, and what few are left are a pack of whining curs who lick the hands that smites them. The whites, by law of conquest, by justice of civilization, are masters of the American continent. And the best safety of the frontier settlements will be secured by the total annihilation of the few remaining Indians, unquote. Your thoughts, Stephen?
Okay, there's this thing that that came on Netflix. I don't know, this may sound off the wall, similar to go down this rabbit hole, but it had these FEMA camps in it that people were going to. It's like predictive programming that was put into this thing called House of Cards. And the economic situation, the last season of that, was they were putting people, giving people jobs. The FEMA was signing them up. I mean, when you think about what that Indian said, they walled them off in an area and starved them. I think they'll try to do that to people again here. I think they're going to do the same thing to us here if they can. That we need to wake up now before this thing falls. That it's headed that way again, I believe. I mean, I know that may be a leap, but you know how they put things in the media that they plan to do? Because this war with Russia was in there before it even happened. All these things that they'll show that they're planning to do, maybe they've jumped the shark a little with this war thing, but the economics, this economic thing's about to implode. And when it does, you know, they have plans for us, I'm afraid. They will open up these places where they'll say, you can come down here and get help. And yet, well, remember these stories about the Indian when you think about going down to that government agency that's going to help you in the future.
Well, doggone you, Stephen Whitener. Doggone you. You seem to find a way to get to the point I am trying to make to everyone. And you seem to arrive at it a little quicker than most.
I'm a thought criminal. Yeah. What can I say?
That's your problem. You're a damn thought criminal, Whitener. Stop it. Well, I think Americans need to examine closely the words of that I read from Mr. Baum and see if they are not the seeds of our feeling of moral high ground as we deal with other people, whether they be other people in our own country or other people of other countries. Is this not the exact attitude that was carried into the war between the states and the Indian Wars that we're using now against everyone else? Consider also that 140 years later, many Indians and Southerners have never forgiven the federal government for their acts of terrorism visited upon them. And I'm one of them.
You know, there are a lot of them walking around here at the Dixie Republic today, too, I bet you.
Oh, I would think that without a doubt that you are spot on, my friend. And now I'm trying to get back. I lost my place here, and I'm trying to get back to it, so I appreciate that. But now, here's the one thing. Let me tell you that the people of the South and the American Indian are in the same boat here. And I know it's hard for most people to believe, but, you know, what was it? I think it was Sheridan said on his deathbed, "The only good Indian I ever knew was dead." Isn't that the same thing? And, of course, we've got, you know, Sherman, who allegedly said to his son on his deathbed, "I only regret that I didn't get to kill every one of those red sons of bitches."
Man. On his deathbed, even. That's...
Yes.
I don't know. I don't want to carry a grudge that long. It eats you up from the inside. You know, it's like, I have not forgiven this government, but I don't want to destroy it. I just want to turn away from it and do without it.
Yeah, I agree too. The last thing I need in my everyday performance of my life, taking care of myself, my wife, and my family, is government. They're the last damn thing I need because they're the biggest impediment, the biggest roadblock to achieving what I would like to have for my family.
I agree. Same here.
Well, you know, good old Abraham Lincoln was the commander-in-chief when the horrible acts of the Long Walk were perpetrated on the Navajo Indian. The entire campaign against the Indian was to make safe passage for the railroads and to secure the land for the speculators. Lincoln was the chief lawyer for many of the railroads before he was elected president, probably why he was elected president. Lincoln also presided over the largest mass execution of American Indians with the hanging of the 39 Santee Sioux in Minnesota in 1862. The day after Christmas, if I'm not mistaken. Well, I think we got some music coming up there, buddy. Got some music coming. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, RBN.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com.
or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.